Welcome to the Otherworld Fiction Podcast. Please like, subscribe, and share. We hope you enjoy the show. Listener discretion is advised. Season 1, Episode 3, Sabotage and Subterfuge. The snow was deep on the roof of the Bear Queen's Winter Palace. It had fallen for the last 5 days and nights, covering the courtyards and surrounding countryside with a thick, almost impenetrable layer. However, the messenger had got through. He had left the mouth of the world riding a fast bear and galloped through the countryside, stopping only to change mounts at certain Alsev staging posts that had been built along the Great Northern Road to support the Alsev attack on Teneris. As his bear ran through the courtyard, he realized his life was in great danger. He was going to have to break the news of the loss of the artillery to Sibylla Alsev herself. The Bear Queen was famous for not receiving bad news well. Unpredictable at the very least, it was said by members of her court that she was insane. It was rumored that she had killed both her mother and her twin sister in order to claim the Alsev throne. It wasn't said too loudly. Anyone caught spreading such falsehoods were usually put to death in a very painful way. They would be ordered to ride the steel mare, a giant curved blade 30 feet high and 20 feet long. The victim would be placed at the top of the blade with a leg either side of the steel shape. For the first few feet, the blade was flat and blunt. But as the slide gained speed, the blade grew sharper and sharper until at the very end it was honed as sharp as a razor. By the time the victim reached the end of the ride, their body had been sliced in half. It wasn't a good way to die. The messenger dismounted at the gates of the palace, where he was challenged by an over-officious guard. He saw an opportunity and pulled out a scroll from his traveling pouch.
"Urgent information for Her Highness. News from Teneris," he said, and handed the scroll over.
The guard took it and ran through the gates in the direction of the throne room. The rider breathed a sigh of relief, dismounted, patted his bear and led it to the stables at the rear of the palace, with the intention of making himself very scarce. At the door to the throne room, the guard was relieved of the scroll by a courtier, who in turn was relieved of it by a regional lord who had tried but failed to catch the eye of the Bear Queen all afternoon. Full of self-importance, the lord marched towards Sibylla seated on her throne. For most of the afternoon, she had been in deep discussions with her advisors. Initial reports from Teneris had mentioned a person dressed as a plague doctor who had been seen on the city battlements helping her troops destroy the city gate. She wanted to know who he was. No one could help her. It was a puzzle, and she didn't like puzzles. Eventually, she had dismissed the meeting, and now, as the lord approached, she was chatting coquettishly with one of her favorite lords and deciding in her mind whether she would spend the night with him. She was not pleased to be disturbed.
"Important news from Teneris," the lord announced importantly.
As the Bear Queen took the document, her mood lightened. She undid the scroll, expecting to read of the death of King Bruno and the extinction of the entire Alatrix family. When she read the news, at first the words didn't register. She read them again, and then a third time. When it became clear that she had lost the majority of her artillery, she said nothing. Calmly and quietly, she drew a dagger from her belt, stood up, and quickly plunged it into the chest of the surprised lord. As he dropped dead at her feet, she turned and kicked a small table the length of the throne room. Decanters and glasses flew everywhere. No one in the room dared to say a word. Most of the lords were shrinking backwards, trying to get as far away from her as possible, vainly attempting to become invisible. The queen looked around the room, seeking anyone who might have advised or helped her to order the artillery to follow the invasion. Deep down, she knew it was her own decision. As soon as the news came that her initial attack had descended into siege, and that King Bruno, the royal family, and lords were hiding behind the wall of their citadel, she had ordered her artillery to get to Teneris as soon as possible. There must be someone to blame. Her artillery commander and his second-in-command had gone with the weapons. She let out a snort. If he had any sense, he wouldn't bother returning, if he had survived. Through her anger, a question niggled at the back of her mind. How did the Great Northern Road collapse? Her first invasion army passed over it without any problems. Her spies hadn't reported anything. She looked across the hall to a lord who was trying to disappear behind a large curtain.
Lord Henry, I can see you behind that curtain. Get an airship and travel to the Great Northern Road. I want a full report of damage, of what is salvageable, and what we have lost.
Her voice lowered to a low growl.
And find out why a perfectly good road chose the very moment my cannon were on it to collapse.
Lord Henry made a low bow and almost ran out of the room in his haste to escape the Bear Queen's anger. The five had distanced themselves from the Great Northern Road. Realizing that their destruction of the artillery train would cause an outcry among the Alsef forces, and that dispatches, troops, and survivors would be using the road between the mountain and Alsef, they had decided to take a route almost due east. They doubted whether any survivors would be pressing on towards Teneris. The discussion between them had been long, and, whilst not exactly argumentative, involved a fair bit of pointing, arm-waving, and raised voices. In fact, most of the pointing and arm-waving was between Anero and Atel. Both Juno and Gunfer had never left Teneris before, and so had no idea where they were going or what direction they should take. Xanthar had his nose deep inside his rescued book. He was trying to find a reason why the use of magic had affected him so much. Once again, the casting of spells had left him weakened, and whilst he hadn't passed out, caused him to feel dizzy, sickly, and lethargic. As far as he was concerned, any direction would do as long as it distanced them from the Alsef troops. Eventually, a route was agreed that involved backtracking some distance to cross the road a few miles below the scene of the sabotage. As Atel had argued, to continue traveling east of the road would bring them to the edge of a wide, marshy estuary that was impossible to cross. The only way north into Dragon's Head would be to travel west to the town of Emberview, positioned at the head of the River Thorn. From there, they would continue east through the top of Dorland, and then turn north and travel up through Dragon's Head by way of the plains of Mawish. Anero had pointed out that to travel into any town would be dangerous, and that he had heard that the plains of Mawish were infested with bandits. Gunfer pointed out that magic was still illegal, and if Xanthar showed any sign of practicing it in the town, it would cause problems with the town authorities. Atel just shrugged and ignored them both. It was obvious to the other three that if there had been any doubts about who was leading the expedition, there wasn't now. They had traveled a day when Gunfer pointed up to the sky. They looked. In the distance, they could see an airship. It wasn't moving. It just hung in the air and then slowly glided to the ground. I figure it's above the artillery landslide. The Bear Queen has sent someone to investigate, Anero said.
Will they be able to tell what actually happened?
Juno asked. Anero shook his head. It was a landslip. These things happen. However, he was mistaken to be complacent. Lord Henry was a very careful man. You had to be if you expected to survive in the court of the Bear Queen. Among his party, he had taken an engineer and a shaman from the Bear Clan, a wild, semi-religious cult that worshipped Kar the Bear God and practiced a crude and ancient form of magic. Like most countries, magic was illegal in Alsef, and Sibylla took great pleasure in the torture and death of anyone suspected of practicing the dark arts. However, she dare not move against the Bear Clan. They held a great deal of influence in the outer regions of Alsef, and she knew that if she moved against them, the people would revolt. In truth, Sibylla was frightened of the Bear Clan not just because of the power they held, but because they also knew the truth about her ascendancy to the throne. As Lord Henry spoke with the commander of the troops and gained first-hand explanations of what had occurred from some of the surviving troops, the engineer and the shaman inspected the scene. At the sight of the landslide, it was soon evident to the lord that the surviving troops were confused. The collapse of the road had taken the lives of many of their companions and commanders, and the survivors were wandering around aimlessly. Some had climbed down and tried to salvage what equipment they could, but the side of the mountain was steep, and the men that made it to the bottom discovered that the equipment that hadn't fallen into the river was beyond rescue. They had made a camp where they took their injured, and having dispatched the rider back to Alsev, sat back and awaited orders. Lord Henry decided he would be the one to give those orders. It took the engineer and the shaman less than an hour to agree. The landslip had been caused by magic. They pointed out to Lord Henry the solid rock that remained in the mountainside and impressed him on its stability. They pointed out how the landslip had occurred in numerous places apparently at the same time. Then the shaman performed some dance-like movements, and the earth around him began to glow. It was evidence of a previous magic. Lord Henry nodded and thought long and hard. It had been sabotage, and the only people that could have done it were people from Teneris. That meant they had a magician. At first, he was tempted to climb back into the airship, return to Alsev, and make his report to Queen Sibylla. Then he thought better of the idea. If he did that, he would only incur the queen's anger. He looked around. He had a small army and a shaman with him. With their help, he would search for the saboteurs. He got a large platoon of the survivors together and told them to march down the road and put themselves under the command of whoever was in charge at the siege. At least they could add to the force attacking Teneris. He then ordered the injured to head back to Alsev as best they could, and kept a small force of 20 men with him. They would be his hunters. He gave orders for them to spread out and look for signs of the saboteurs, and instructed the shaman to go with them. He and the engineer climbed into the airship. They would fly low and search from above. It took 3 days for the group to reach Emberview. Throughout the journey, they had occasionally seen the airship, albeit from a distance. Its continual presence in the sky proved an arrow wrong. There was someone searching for them. Once they realized that fact, they were even more careful and stuck to traveling through deep forest until eventually they came to the head of a river and the outskirts of the town. An arrow paused them before they emerged from the trees and suggested that one of them went ahead to see if everything was as it should be. He came back after a few minutes. "There's two Alsev soldiers standing just by the gate. They're not on guard, but they are watching for something. Or someone," he reported.
"How have they got here ahead of us?" Juno asked.
"They took a quicker road and didn't stick to the forest paths," Gunfer replied.
"What are they looking for?"
Xanthar asked.
"Us,"
Attell answered.
"But how do they know what we look like?"
he asked.
"I think three guards in Teneris uniforms and an archmage in his robes would be a giveaway to anyone with less than half a brain,"
Attell responded a bit sharper than she intended. Anero shook his head. "They have no idea who they're looking for. Just someone who looks suspicious, as if they come from Teneris and have wiped out their artillery." He looked towards Attell. "Though I admit, the uniforms give us all away."
"In which case, you stay here, and I'll enter the town. I'll pick up some clothing for you all and bring it back,"
Attell offered. Juno cocked her head.
"What do you propose using for money?"
she asked. Attell smiled, opened her tunic, and ripped at the lining. A number of dragon's head krona were stitched there.
"I always carry cash," she remarked.
No one even bothered to ask her where she had gotten it from.
"I would still be very careful. If the guards see you going in and then coming out with a number of parcels, then entering the town again would just arouse their suspicions," Gunfer pointed out.
Attell nodded.
"You're right. I need to get in without being seen."
20 minutes later, Attell was hidden in the back of a merchant's wagon. Not even the merchant knew she was there. As with the entrance to any large town, there's always a bottleneck where impatient merchants queue up waiting for papers to be checked. They're so agitated they never even check the rear of their wagon. Thus, Attell entered Emberview unnoticed. She let the merchant take her to the marketplace before hopping out and vanishing among the crowds. She looked around. The marketplace was large and seemed to be divided up into different areas of produce. She found the cattle market and the area that seemed to be full of bakeries. She found the tailoring section next to the fruit merchants. She ignored the rich bespoke tailors, whose boys sat cross-legged outside their shops, busily stitching away. Instead, she found what seemed to be the second-hand merchants. Aware that she could arouse suspicions by purchasing everything from one retailer, she shopped around. It took her the best part of an hour, but she had what she needed. As she left the city, there was one more thing she had to do. She looked around for another range of specialized merchants. She walked out of the city with ease. It's always the way. The Alsev spies had been instructed to watch for people entering the city. No one had told them to watch people coming out. Surprisingly, everyone agreed with Atel's choice of clothing for them. Juno had been given a pair of doeskin leggings, a shirt, and a fringe jacket. Dressed, she looked like a backwoods woman. Gunfer had a thick shirt and sleeveless leather jerkin. His trousers, although worn, were hard-wearing. Dressed, he could easily pass as a laborer or a farm worker. For Xanther, she had chosen a faded brocade jacket, a white shirt, and a shabby pair of leather trousers. He looked like a failed scholar, especially when she persuaded him to have his beard shaved off, leaving only a gray mustache. Juno remarked that it took years off him. Xanther blushed. For Anero, she had chosen a faded blue shirt, leather trousers, and a leather-studded jacket. Newly dressed, they staggered their entrance into the town. Juno walked in with Gunfer, and then in 5 and 10 minute intervals, Xanther, Anero, and Atel walked in by themselves. They met up at an inn Atel had spotted near the marketplace. They allowed themselves to stay for 2 nights to ensure that they were well rested and fed, and to allow the Alsev airship search to pass over. It wasn't the finest hostelry in town, but it was cheap and clean, and no one asked questions. They mingled at the bar with other visitors and travelers. The news was all about the invasion of Teneris by Alsev and the Bear Queen. The rumors swung from the death of King Bruno to the total destruction of the Citadel, to the Bear Queen leading the invasion herself. The news of the collapse of the road and the loss of the artillery was also causing tongues to wag. Many thought it odd. A few said the road had been unstable for years, but some suspected foul play. It had been frustrating as they wanted to check out some of the rumors, especially concerning King Bruno. But the only way they could do that was by Xanther and his magic, and it was far too risky to use that medium in the town. Then, on the second morning, as Atel and Gunfer were eating a cheap breakfast of cold meats and fresh, newly baked bread, Atel heard the rumor she had been listening for. A trader in precious stones who bought and sold his goods from the North Islanders was complaining that business was bad. He had experienced trouble buying stock. The North Islanders were not interested in their mining of the precious stones. Instead, all their efforts were concentrating on an alignment with some of the pirate lords, and together they were fighting some strange creatures that had appeared in the southern islands. For Gunfer, this was evidence that the princess had been right all along. He had to admit to himself that he had experienced doubts, but now the doubts were gone. As they finished their meal, there was a noise at the entrance of the inn. They looked up to see a man in full Alsev uniform march through the door and walk up to the end of the bar that acted as a reception area. Behind him was the unusual sight of a Bear Clan shaman. Some of the travelers in the room made protective signs, others just stared. Atel leant forward and hissed a whisper to Gunfer.
"Go upstairs and get Xanther out of his room and out of the inn. That shaman will pick up his aura of magic if he hasn't already. Tell Juno and Anero to leave as well. Split up and get yourselves to the north gate. I'll meet you at the start of the road to Dragon's Head."
Slowly, Gunfer rose from the table and walked across the room and up the stairs. Lord Henry glanced at him as he ascended the stairs, but then turned his gaze to scan the rest of the occupants of the room. Atel kept calm and remained seated. She dawdled over the remains of her breakfast. She looked up at the staircase. Anero and Juno were walking down arm in arm. She gave a slight, imperceptible nod as they turned and walked out of the building. Without saying a word, he walked past, through the room, and out of the door. Atel looked at her plate. There was a piece of paper there. She picked it up and read the scribbled words.
"He's gone. I got him out of the window."
She folded the scrap of paper, pushed her platter away, and left the table. She wandered over to the counter at the far end, well away from the Alsev lord, and waved the server towards her.
I would like to pay for the lodgings.
The server brought her bill. She scanned it. 5 rooms and meals. It seemed reasonable. And she placed the appropriate cash onto the counter. Just as she turned away, a figure lurched up to her. She glanced at the newcomer. At first glance, he looked like an ordinary merchant, but there was something about him that raised the hackles on her back.
What's a young girl like you doing in a place like this?
He asked. She was gobsmacked. No one had ever used a line like that. As she struggled for an appropriate reply, she suddenly felt something prodding her stomach. She looked down to see a dagger sticking into her tunic. She looked back up at the man. His eyes were narrow and hard. He spoke in a sharp half-whisper.
I know who you are, princess. I deal with your father. Saw you at court some time ago. I never forget a face. Now I also know that a certain person standing not 20 feet away would pay handsomely for that information. It's as a favor to your father that I'm offering you the first opportunity to pay me. 10,000 dragon's head krona would be the price.
She shook her head.
That is foolish. I do not carry that amount with me.
He grinned a thin, unfriendly smile.
I know. That's why you'll send one of your guards back to the Citadel and get the money from your father. I'm sure that he'll find a way past the siege. It'll take some time, but I'm not in a hurry. I know what mission you're on, but if you think to escape the invasion, your journey has ended here until I get my money. It shouldn't take more than a fortnight at the most. Until then, you'll be safe here.
He grinned as he pushed the dagger further into her tunic. She could now feel the steel tip touching the skin of her stomach.
How do you know that I have guards with me?
She asked.
Because no princess would travel without one. You broke your fast with one. I watched. He's just gone out now, but he'll be back. There's probably another one, maybe 2 upstairs. Now, if you would be so kind, I suggest you move very carefully towards the stairs, and we'll go to your room where you'll call your guards.
As she moved, she felt the dagger withdraw, but the man was close to her. To remind her how close he was, he prodded it into her side. The stairs went up to the first floor, where the lodgings were. They were accessed by an open balcony that looked down on the room below. As she reached the top of the stairs, she looked around. No one was looking up at them. The Alsev Lord was chatting to someone at a nearby table. The shaman was by himself drinking something. As she considered what she should do, she felt a sharp stabbing at the center of her back. His dagger had gone right through her clothing and broken the skin in the small of her back. She was very aware that it was a fraction away from her spine. She walked along the balcony to her room and calmly opened the door. As she pushed it forward, she suddenly dived forward into a roll and slammed the door behind her. It hit the man full in the face and he fell backwards. Quickly, she opened it again. The man was standing there, one hand holding the dagger, the other holding his face. Without a hesitation, she leant back and drop-kicked the man full in the chest. He staggered backwards and went straight over the balcony. There were a few seconds of silence, and then a crash. She moved to the balcony and looked over. The man had landed half on and half off a thick wooden table. By the position of his body on the floor, it was obvious he had broken both his back and his neck. His dagger was next to him on the floor.
He tried to rape me!
She shouted to the crowd below that were gathering around the body. The Alsev Lord glanced up from his conversation and took in the scene. It didn't interest him, and he returned to his talk. A figure appeared next to her. It was the innkeeper.
I suggest you get your luggage and go. Now. This is a respectable inn, and I care not for trouble. I do not know what the truth of the matter is, but I've seen you around for the last 2 days. And you've not caused trouble. so I'll give you the benefit of the doubt. Go. Leave the city. This mess will be sorted.
With that, he turned around and walked away. She went back into her room, quickly packed her bag with a sigh of relief, and left the inn. As she walked out of the door, she noticed that the Alsev Lord and the shaman were nowhere to be seen. To be continued. If you enjoyed today's episode, please consider supporting the Otherworld Fiction Podcast on Patreon, or by listening and subscribing on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for listening, and please, don't forget to like, subscribe, and share.